Patty.
Your name?
Harold Heward.
Harold?
60.
Where were you born? Were you born in Winnipeg?
No, I was born in Quebec.
In Quebec? Here.
Yeah.
You were born in Quebec, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask when you joined the Grenadiers? When you
I enlisted in Winnipeg here, you know, right in the beginning.
Oh, right. Did you go in with friends? Did you have friends who were going in too?
No.
No? Can I ask why you went in?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, it's because we happened to be here at the time, you know.
Yeah.
I was in the militia before.
Oh, I see.
Before the war, you know. I was one of my brother-in-law.
In Quebec or here in Manitoba?
No, in Manitoba, here in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah.
But I was working out in the mines at the time, you know.
In Manitoba here?
Like Manitoba in Ontario.
Oh, yeah. And did you go to school in Quebec?
Pardon?
Did you go to school in Quebec?
Yeah, I went very young.
Yeah.
We left Quebec when I was 12 years old.
Oh, yeah. Well, can you tell me a little bit about your training? Training? What kind of training you had when you joined the Grenadiers?
Well, here, you know, when I joined the Grenadiers, I was in the transport. You know, I got in the transport right away. So I didn't have too much of the army training, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any machine gun or anything like
that? Well, we had machine gun training.
Yeah.
And as I said before, you know, we had that on the machine gun when I was in the militia, you know.
Yeah.
They used to call that Saturday Night Soldier.
Saturday Night Soldier?
Yeah.
Well, you drove trucks then?
Yeah.
Well, and you went to Jamaica. Can you tell me a bit about what happened there, about training and that? Did you do any training?
Well, no, in Jamaica I didn't do any training at all, you know. The transport was, we actually were short of men there, you know. And they had, they were keeping the company up in Newcastle all the time, you know. Yeah. Then there was the bunch in the prison camp, guard in the prison camp, always a company there. And as far as the transport, you know, we were short of men. We were kept very, very busy all the time, you know, in the transport wire.
Yeah, carrying supplies and or what?
Yeah, hauling the ration, you know, the ration for the prison camp and the woman internist camp, the internist camp and all that, you know, all this go all over the place, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that was one truck that was busy all day on that. Well, I was on that too, you know.
Yeah. Do you have a good time in Jamaica?
Very good. It was a big wedding right through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then you came back to Winnipeg.
Then we came back to Winnipeg.
Yeah. Well, when you came back to Winnipeg, did you know where you were going to be going after that? Did they?
No, well, we didn't know.
No?
We didn't actually know where we were going, you know.
Did you have any family or friends in Winnipeg?
Well, all my friends, my wife and was here then.
Oh,
you know.
You were married by this? Yeah.
Then.
Well, then you were here for a few weeks. Did you do any training here in Winnipeg? Or,
no.
Or get equipment ready or
no.
Trucks or
no.
Anything?
Well, we had the trucks, you know, but it was the same here, you know. Well, we kept busy here too.
What kind of
thing? Well, some of the men from the transport, they had, they went on the Brangon carrier, you know, they had the training on that. Some of the men were on that,
yeah.
On that training.
Yeah.
They took that course.
Oh, I see.
But I didn't go.
Well, then you went to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Can you tell me anything about the train trip? You went by train to Vancouver?
Remember
much about the train?
No.
Any funny things happen or stories to tell or anything?
No, well, not that in our bunch, you know, that we were, everything was very quiet, you know. That, You know, outside of fooling around, talking and laughing and, you know, that, but nothing much, you know, that I can say.
Yeah. Did you take any equipment with you?
From here?
Yeah, from here.
Well, we had our soldier equipment, you know, the rifle and
you
the pack, you know.
Rifle and
bayonet in the pack sack, you know, whatever the extra clothing that we had.
Do you remember when you got to Vancouver? Do you remember anything that happened there?
No. As far as that goes, you know, we got into Vancouver and we got on the boat right away.
Can you tell me anything that happened? You got on the boat. Do you remember what you did? What you thought of the boat? Remember anything about it?
Well, the boat, actually, you know, it was, we didn't know that at the time, you know, but I read that in the Legionnaire magazine after, and that's not so long ago, but 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe you have seen that, or a few of the boys have seen that in the magazine, you know, in the Legionnaire, you know, the fate of a ship. Well, that was that ship that took us to Hong Kong. You see that every trip that ship made, it was a ship from that they had from converted into troop ship.
Mm-hmm.
It was a liner before.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and all the cabin were boarded up, and we went in the cargo hold, you know, in hammocks then. And it was so crowded, you know, you couldn't move in between them in the first place. But then, you know, that that ship, you know, the Avotia, they call it. Every trip it made, it was either damaged, you know, it was shell or bomb or something. So when they brought it in, they had loaded it with the Air Force just before us, you know. And it went out so far, and it was shell, and it came back to Vancouver. And it was repaired then. Then we got on it. But we went to Hong Kong. On our way out, it was all right, you know, it had no damage. But coming back, it got sunk. But the story went, you know, like the fate of a ship, you know, that that was in the Legionnaire. And that was the same ship, you know.
Did you get sick or anything going overseas?
No.
No. Was it smooth or rough? No.
No, it was. We had a good trip.
Good trip.
A very good trip. Yeah.
That's good. Did you know where you were going by this time?
We knew where we were going after we got to near Hawaii.
Oh
no. You know, well, nobody had told us where we were going. By that time, you know, but we know that that's where we were going.
Mm. And somebody told you in Hawaii that's where you were?
Well, amongst the men, you know, how the men talk, you know, maybe somebody heard it from somebody, you know,
yeah.
A little higher up. But between Hawaii and the Philippines, the colonel had told us, you know, where we were going.
Yeah, do you remember how you felt at that time? Did it make you feel good you were going to Hong Kong?
Actually, you know, personally, I really didn't care, you know.
Did you know anything about the Japanese? Did you?
No.
Well, you arrived in Hong Kong. Can you tell me much about when you got to Hong Kong, when you arrived? Can you remember anything when you got off the ship, what happened?
Yeah, well, when we got off the ship, you know, well, they just came and picked us up, you know, and took us into camp to in Shanshipo.
By truck, or did
by
you
truck,
walk?
Yeah. Well, we marched, that's right. That wasn't that far, you know.
Did you stay on ship long when you got to port, or did you get...
No, we got out right away, yeah.
Do you remember the Chinese people? Do you remember, were they happy to see you, or they didn't care, or...
Oh, well, that's too long ago, you know, I can't. I can't really remember that.
Yeah. How about the camp? Do you remember much about the camp?
Well, the camp, you see, was a pretty good camp, you know, when we first got there. But, you see, when we came back from Jamaica, I was transferred from the Grenadiers into the Ordnance Corps. You see, and when I went to Hong Kong, I was in the Ordnance Corps reattached to the Grenadiers, you see. So I went with the regiment, following the regiment.
Oh, now what does that mean? Does that mean you would have the same, what kind of work would you do?
Mechanic, you know.
Oh, mechanic, yeah. On trucks and...
Yeah, trucks and stuff, you know.
Well, when you were in Hong Kong, did you do any work, any ordnance work? Did you work on trucks before the battle?
No, we didn't have nothing.
No trucks?
We didn't have no truck at all. No. As a matter of fact, when the Japanese started bombing and all that, we had to go in a civilian garage and just about fight with them to have trucks to just transport the ammunition and the men. We had nothing.
What company were you in? You were in Ordnance?
Headquarters.
Headquarters company, eh?
Yeah.
Did you do any kind of training or anything in Hong Kong? Did you, you had your rifle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all we had to
do,
you know.
Did you go to pillboxes, or did you stay around headquarters?
Yeah, you stayed on camp, you know. We had nothing.
Did you do guard duty? Or
no.
No? No? Any kind of work?
No.
Nothing, eh? Well, do you remember when the war started? Do you remember how you knew that the war started?
Well, how we knew that it started, we well knew about it. And that is the first thing we knew, the bombs started dropping.
Oh, that's the first time you knew,
right? Yeah.
Okay. Were you at the camp then?
I was in the camp at the time.
Yeah.
There was some of the company had gone up in the hill. I don't know what... I know some of the company had been up in Hong Kong on the island at the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did the Japanese bomb the camp?
Yeah.
Were you there when it was bombed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was anyone killed?
Bombing, I shouldn't say shell, but shooting, you know.
Straight yeah. Was anyone killed at that time?
No, I don't think, outside of Chinas, I don't think none of our men get killed there, you know.
Chinese,
yeah.
Well, then, can you remember what happened for the next number of days? Did you stay at camp, or did you go out?
No, well, the same day we went up in the hill, on the island, you know. We were staying in Kowloon at the time. The Shanxi Po camp is on Kowloon, on the mainland.
Yeah. I have a map. Would you like to look at a map?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got two maps.
Well, yeah, through the map I can explain you better, you know, how...
There's one map. I don't know if you can see that very well. Here's a big map of Hong Kong. This big one, Hong Kong.
Yeah. So the Victoria Harbor, yeah.
Yeah.
Shanxi Wan.
That's a bay.
That's a bay of water. Yeah.
Mount Cameron is here.
Yeah, Mount Cameron.
Yeah, it's a big mountain, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
we were here in Mount Cameron, you know.
Here's one Shai Gap.
One Shai Gap?
Yeah, and there's one Nishan Gap.
Wong Le Chong, that's where I was when they capitulated.
Oh, yeah.
Wong Le Chong.
Well, you went from Kowloon, from the camp, over to the island then?
Over to the island.
Yeah. Did you go with everybody else when they went, or...?
Well, naturally, you know, like us, you know, we were there. There was myself, Sergeant Neil, and there was Sergeant Neil and George Brzezinski. We were together, you know, while we were in the ordnance, you know.
Did you have a truck?
No.
No truck?
No truck. We had to follow the training.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you came over to the island?
Aberdeen here, you know, Aberdeen Reservoir.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you do on the island? When you came to the island, what did you do for the next time?
Well, there we went and picked up some trucks, you know, and we had trucks. Mr. Queen Hughes was our transport officer at the time.
Oh, yeah? Did you get the trucks, or did somebody get them for you? Or
No, we went and got them, you know, like Sheesh MacArthur, and myself. There was Jack Hay, a fellow from Pallet Mound, and there was a few of the fellow. We went down in Hong Kong, and we got some trucks from a garage there.
Yeah, you stole them? We
just took them and went with them.
Yeah, it was good trucks?
Yeah, they were pretty good, you know, like the one I had was a truck made in England, a British Bedford, you know. That was a pretty good truck. But we had all kinds.
Well, then you brought the trucks over to the island, and...
No, we took them from there, from...
From here?
From Hong Kong, yeah.
Then did you get orders from somebody to drive the trucks to different places, or did you do any fighting, or just...
No, well, the fighting we done, you know, was here at Wong Le Chong.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
You know, that... here's where the Wong Le Chong Gap was here. That's the road that goes up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
Black Links Road.
That's where the Brigadier got killed, right here.
Mm-hmm.
Brigadier Larson, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, every night we were going, we were on guard. That very same night we were on guard here.
On guard, yeah.
At Wong Le Chong.
In a pillbox, or...?
No, we were out. There was a place here. There was a place here, you know, that cut in the hill, you know, that we had taken, you know, we drove our truck, and, you know, and we had the camouflage there for our truck.
It was like trees
and a green screen, you know. But the first thing we knew there, you know, that there was some kind of a garage here, you know, that we were in here, you know, and that was full of ammunition in there. That was more or less like a ammunition dump, you know. It was something like a garage, you know, and a shell hit that.
Is this from a plane or from a boat?
No, it came from the mainland,
the shell.
Over that mountain there, you know, and it hit that, you know.
Was anybody...
But actually, you know, the Japanese seemed to know the place a lot better than we did.
Yeah. Had you been to the mainland before? Is this the first time?
No, that's the first time, you know, on the mainland here in Kowloon, you know, that we've never been there, you know.
Maybe this map's
a
little better. Yeah. Here's one of the islands, and here's Kowloon up here, you know?
Yeah, well,
And here's part of Kowloon here.
Well, this is the island, this is the mainland here, Kowloon, the bay. Here's the harbor. Mm-hmm. And then,
You would go over here and, I guess, You got your trucks from Victoria here somewhere.
Yeah, well, we got our truck right in the city of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You said it was Bedford. Was it a big truck?
Yeah, that was a pretty big truck, that one.
Yeah, it had a cover on the back of it? Or
no, it was open.
Open truck, yeah. Like a dump truck?
Yeah. Not a drum. You know, it was a flat bed.
Oh, flat bed.
Yeah.
Well, did you carry supplies around?
Well, we had, that was our route here, you know, that we were coming from Wanshai. Where is that?
Wanshai is here. That's Wanishan.
Wanshai.
Wanshai is here?
Yeah. You see, we were coming down here, you know.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you see, we were going up to the ammunition dump, pick up ammunition and take them all over the place, like Aberdeen and all those places, you know. Here was the place, the road, you know, that we were going through.
Yeah. What was the road like? Was it a good road?
The road was good, you know, before they bombed it and shell it.
Yeah.
But here's the mountain that I'm talking about, you know, like they were shelling from the mainland here, you know. Well, they were shelling from here into here, you know.
Well, that's like from the east over.
Yeah, over here. You see, like, here's the island, you know, we'll see.
Maybe best to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Kowloon. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they were, here's the bay here, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they were more or less in here, you know, and they were shelling us from here into...
Was most of the ammunition in this one garage? Was it all the ammunition in the one garage, or was there...
It was distributed. It was all over the place, you know, and I will remember, you know, that many a time that we went out with the trucks there, you know, like the first one ahead, I'd keep on going, and the last truck in the back would always take the first branch off where he had to go, you know, so we didn't have to stop the convoy.
Oh, right, yeah.
You see, the bunch that I was with, you know, we had 8 trucks, and we were all following one another. But, you see, actually, the way we had to drive, we couldn't drive in daytime. And at night, you couldn't put the light of your trucks on, you know. You didn't want to give the convoy away. So we were driving with no lights at all whatsoever, you know, just looking on the side and following the side, you know. This is something that I never will forget, you know, the way that we used to drive around that, you know. No lights, you know, and sometimes, you know, if you look in the daytime and look on the side of the road, you know, that in daytime will scare you, never mind driving at night without lights at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that time you don't think about those things, you know, you go.
Yeah. Do you remember if everything... Things were working as a regiment, were the orders flowing? Did you get regular orders from somebody to go out, take ammunition? Or?
Well, we were getting our order from our transport officer, you know. Like, at night, you see, like, a certain bunch will go a certain place and the other bunch will go to the other place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't very many of us left in Hong Kong there, you know, that were actually in the transport that I can very well remember was Joe Miller, Cees McCarthy, Bill Harding, and Archie Clements, Bill Dubé, the two Fury brothers were with us, and at 7, Jack Hayes at 8, Jack Hayes was with us. And that's just about all I can remember of the fellows that were really in the transfer that were with us down there, you know.
Did you take turns driving trucks?
No, no, we couldn't do that, you know, we were too short.
There was always one driver and one man to sit, or two men?
Then, one man.
One driver and one man.
Then.
Did you deliver food and water and things too?
The food we didn't, the bunch I was with, you know, it was mostly ammunition.
Ammunition, yes.
I remember, you know, one night, there was a... We had orders, you know, they load on my truck, they load the 2.5-inch mortar bomb, trench mortar ammunition, you know. And the other truck had the 3-inch. While we went to Aberdeen here, the 2.5-inch were going to Aberdeen. And the 3-inch were going on Mount David. Or maybe I'm mixing it up now, you know, one way or the other, anyway. But when I got there, you know, to Mount David, well, found out I had the wrong kind. The wrong ammunition for what they had. So I had to come back and make the trip, you know, and come and change that and go back. And believe me, it was no fun. It was no fun.
Were the Japanese planes bombing you, or were you getting shot at?
They shot at and shelled from the mainland. That's the road here that I was saying, you know, that I will remember that, you know.
Down to Aberdeen and around?
They were picking us off from the mainland, you know, along here, you know, on the harbor. And believe me, you know, Victoria Harbor.
Yeah.
Believe me, it was no fun.
Well, after the ammunition dump blew up, was anybody killed then? Do you remember?
Not in our gang, not in our bunch, not from the transport. But that's when after that, you know, that they told us to get out, come out, you know, that somebody from A Company had come down and told us to come back, and we move A Company. You know, A Company was cut and was surrounded there in a bunch there, you know.
Stanley Gap, maybe?
Stanley Gap,
somewhere?
Well, we had come up, you know, right on the corner of the road. Here's Wanley Chown.
Right.
And there's this road here that goes up here, and this one that come up here. Well, this is here that was... It's not that great, yeah. The big pillbox that was on the corner here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had taken this road here, take the A Company in, you know. And there's a great big pillbox. We had to go around this Morrison Hill, one shy, and all that, you know. Well, this is the part of the road that I say, you know, that you look, you can see here on the map, you know, where the big ravine is. Well, you get alongside here, along here, all along here, you know, that you look down, you know, and if a truck ever went in there, you know, I'll...
Thanks. Have you seen any Japanese by this time?
Oh yeah, well, we had seen some, you know.
Yeah.
But actually, you see, we didn't know, like with us, we didn't know the difference between the Jap and the Chinese, actually, you know, at the time. Now if I see a Jap or a Chinese, I can tell you the difference just looking at them. But in those days, you know, we couldn't. We didn't know the difference. If you try to do something, you may have a Chinese, one of your side. So.
Well, did you know what the Japanese would do to you if you surrendered?
Well, we knew that the Japanese didn't take prisoners. And that's what we were waiting for when we were in Victoria here, that Victoria Harbor. You see, we had came down here from the hill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria Peak. And we had come down here someplace, you know, at the university there. Yes, I remember that, where the university. We had come down there.
Were you captured or did?
No, well, they took us down there, that's all. They were waiting to see for the command to see what to do, you know.
Well, were you captured? Where were you captured? In one
Where's Mount David there?
Mount
David? Mount, Wanlichang. One Shy Gap.
One Shy is
here.
One Shy right here.
One Shy Gap. With the Mount Cameron.
Yeah.
But we were here for a while.
This is transport, eh?
Yeah. And then we moved out of there. We came up here, and then, well, that's the road that take us to those hills, Victoria Peak. Well, that's where I was captured when we were up here at Victoria Peak. And then they took us down. I don't know what right now, you know, I can't remember how we got down, but...
Were there many men captured, or with you? Were you with other people?
There was quite a bunch there, you know.
Yeah. Was this an official surrender when the island surrendered, or was this...
Well, that was official, that we had the word there to...
To surrender, I see.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But here's Mount Davis that I was telling you, you know, that a load of ammunition that was mixed, you know. And I had to come back here, you know, and change it.
At Aberdeen, yeah.
At Aberdeen, the Aberdeen Reservoir here, mm-hmm. You see.
Was there
enough ammunition, do you think? Did the men get enough? Was there enough ammunition? There was not enough for anything. But I don't know, you know, I happened to... This, you know, that there was a paper that came out printed in English about the Canadian, you know, in Hong Kong. But we were always a handful of men here and a handful there. But naturally, you know, the whole place was short. Eh? And always a handful all over the place, you know. But naturally, everywhere that the Japanese turned around, there was a handful of Canadians here and there.
Well, what happened after surrender? You were taken to the university with other men?
No, we were taken to... we were taken here. Then we came back.
Were you wounded, though? Were you wounded?
Yeah, I was. Never to stop me, you know. I can show you this foot, you know, how a bullet went through the boot, you know, and right through the foot.
Yeah.
See, but I went right up to the end.
Were any of your friends killed during the fighting?
Oh, there's quite a few, you know. Yeah. Benny Singleton. Actually, you know, where I was at one time, you know, nobody, you see, we were down here, you know, and the Jap and our men were on one side of the road, and the Jap and us were on the other side of the road, you know, and they were shooting at one another, you know. Most of the time, you know, you didn't know what you were facing.
Well, after the surrender, you were taken to a camp?
Yeah, we were taken here, you know, we went to the university. Well, I can, of course, they don't give you nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here, you know, Mount Davis, you know, well, we had come down here, you know.
Yeah, down to Victoria somewhere.
And then they took us to Victoria Barracks.
Mm-hmm.
We were there for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you get any food? Or
not very much. We only had about a couple of meals there in the time we were there.
Mm-hmm. How about during the battle? Were you getting enough food then, or enough to drink? You getting any sleep? Any time to sleep?
The sleep, you know, well, if you could sleep in amongst all the stuff, you know, well, that was all right, you know. But actually, that was all right. Then we marched from there, we went across on the ferry, which I think that's what it is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be.
Kowloon.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, the road here, you know, and it goes up.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, then they took us across and then marched back to our camp, you know. And Shensipo that. But when we got tired, you know, you should see the camp, you know, and the windows, everything was stripped right out of them. Doors were gone, windows were gone, everything was gone.
What happened to everything?
Well, most likely that the Chinese, you know, that...
did you have anything with you? Did you have any blankets?
Well, we had some blanket that they have given us here, you know.
How about your foot? Did you get any medical supply? A doctor look at it or anything?
No, well, it's just when we got to Victoria Barracks there.
Mm-hmm.
I had the doctor.
Did he fix it up for you?
Yeah. And that was one of our own doctors, and on the side of the knee here.
Well, you went to the camp. Can you remember? Tell me much about what happened in the camp. Was there anybody in charge of the camp? Was there an officer in charge?
Well, our own officer.
Were you getting any kind of food? What kind of things happened?
Yeah, there's so many things that happen at the same time, you know, that, you know. One thing that I like to say, you know, that we had a doctor, Captain Reed. And we'll go there with sore that was festered, you know. Well, he'll tell us, put hot water on it. Which is full of sense, you know, that the poor fellow, you know, he can't tell you anything, he's got nothing himself, you know. And his name, he used to say, look at that, you know, and he used to say, well, carry on with that water. So his name stayed Carry On Reed. But by God, you know, that man turned out very good, you know. That man was, you know, I can't... say too much for him, you know, because I thought that man was a real square shooter there, you know. As a matter of fact, you know, they were all.
Yeah.
But Reed came with us in Japan. He was in my camp in Japan, you know.
Okay, do you remember much about, did you have any recreation? Did you do any work when you were in Shanshipo?
In Shanshipo, we went to work at Katak on the Air Force, you know, the airport there, you know. Well, the British were there, you know,
The British?
Yeah, well, the British, you know, they wanted to take that hill. There was that one hill that was blocking to make a nice runway there. And the Chinese would never let them take that down. Because that little hill was the only one that had a tree on. You know, and to them, you know, it was something. So the British never took that hill down. But when the Jap took over, well, then we were working there, take that hill down, level that out, you know.
Canadians, British?
Canadian and Imperial, Portuguese then, the volunteer, they were there working with us, Hindus, everybody were working there. We took that hill down, and well, I didn't stay there. I took sick, you know. I went to Bowen Road Hospital for a while. Then when I came out of there, well, I went on the first Canadian drop that went to Japan.
So, were you sick because you didn't get enough to eat?
The sickness, you know what happened, that they had pick up flowers, you know, out of the warehouse. They swept the floor, and they were making bun out of that, you know. And there was cigarette butts and matches and everything in there, you know. Well, people took dysentery right away, eh? You can imagine. And that's what got me.
Well, it's for eating
dysentery, you know.
Yeah. Remember much about the food that you were getting? What kind of food did you get?
Rice, you know. Soggy rice.
Did you like rice?
I like it now. I don't mind, you know. I'll eat rice now, you know.
But then?
But for a long time, I couldn't look at it even. But right now, you know, it doesn't make any difference. As a matter of fact, you know, that's for the change in the meal, you know, I like a feed of rice.
Did you eat with chopsticks or a spoon or a fork?
Well, we got used to chopsticks, you know. We had forks, and we had our own army-issued forks and knives, you know. But the knife, naturally, we couldn't keep them. So.
Do you remember anybody trying to escape at all from any of the camps?
Well, there's some that tried it. But they didn't go far. Yeah, and Adam and George Bezinski, and what was the other fellow's name, another fellow that...
Did you get any kind of information from the outside, do you remember? Did you ever know what was going on in the war, whether the Japanese were winning or the Americans? How
we get news pretty well steady, you know. And the Chinese, some of the Chinese will come in and tell us. You know, for a while it was quite grim. If you had a little money, you know, you could buy food from the Chinese through the fence. But then there was another thing, you know, that you couldn't take too much of a chance on either, you know. If you were going out to work, like in Japan, you know, well, we were in the shipyard, you know. And the foreman that in our group, you know, I used to deal a lot with him. Buying stuff, buying cigarette, tobacco, you know, and I always had enough cigarette myself. But the point was to try to supply the other fellows. Like our foreman, Mokado, you know, he knew. I guess he was kind of paying attention to the man. And he told me one day, you know, he said, "You never pick up a cigarette butt." I said, "No." As a matter of fact, many of the boys figured, you know, that I was working for the job, because when they gave me a job, I wouldn't go out walking around, you know. They gave me some work to do, and the foreman was good enough, you know, he didn't care how much I did, but I stayed on my job. You know, I always stayed there, but the other fellow used to think, you know, that I was with them, you know, but it's my nature that is that way. You know? And the foreman used to come in, you know, and every day he'd bring me 2 balls of rice with cornmeal in it. And you know those canned of bacon powder we have here, the 1 pound bacon powder can? Every day he'll bring me that full of cigarette butt that he'll pick up and give it to me. Well, I never kept them, you know. I used to give them in the hospital then. Then I'll go in the hospital and give it to the boys in there, say, "Here, divide it." So, because I always had enough cigarette, you know, to keep me.
How were the Japanese guards? Did they treat you well, or were they pretty mean at times?
Some of them, you know, some of them were very good, but they had to wash themselves too, you know. They were told what to do. You see, and they had to carry on what they were told to do. But mind you, the civilian, they had the army on their back too, you know. Because some of the civilians, the bunch that I work with, they were very good. The one that I was with. But some of the other guys, you know, like they didn't like those jobs very much, you know, what that they were working with. Most likely that those were watched a little closer by the guards, you know. And you can imagine yourself that if one of the guards catch one of those guys dealing with us or something like that, you know, that he'll be punished 3 times as severe as we were. Because they were not supposed to do that. So as I say, you know, they have their rules and regulations just the same as we have.
How about the Chinese people? Were they, how did they get along well with you? Or, you know, were they against you? Or...
To tell you the truth, you know, I never had much to do with them, you know. You know, to say, we were always in some way occupied enough that, you know, that we can't be out too much, you know.
How about the officers?
Our officer?
Yeah.
Well, to be fair and square, you know, all the way across. Mind you, the officer, they didn't have to do what they did for us. They were getting their pay. They were buying medicine for us. And the medicine that were coming to camp and were bought by the office's money. And what Major Crawford could pull from the job at the same time, you know, well, it brings in a bit, you know. But if it wouldn't have been for the officer to buy the stuff, you know, many, many more of us would have stayed there. The officers, you know, you can't say anything about them, you know. As far as I'm concerned, I had no trouble with them, too.
Yeah, yeah. What was the worst thing about being in camp as a prisoner of war? Is there anything that was worse than anything else?
You mean in sickness or?
Yeah, about being in the camp. There was one thing that bothered you all the time.
I tell you, the worst thing was a few of us have the same, you know. I know it was like that for me, you know, that to be at nothing doing. Until we start working at Kaitak, you know, just idling around, you know. That was the worst part of it. Then the men start getting what they call the happy feet. And, you know, sometimes you hear somebody talking about pain. Pain, you don't know what pain is until you got those things. Those happy feet. When you see men like, I'll mention the name, Deku Man. He was a Dutchman. Great big brute of a man, you know, as rugged as you can find. And when you see a man like that, simply sit down and cry, you know, break down. Believe me, that's all. And, you know, it's something that you can't explain. You can't explain the way that it felt. You see, that works in the nerves. The lack of vitamin, you know, works in the nerve all the time. So, being idle, and those things get you, you know, believe me. Lots of time I used to see the young one, sometimes crying. But I used to think to myself, why don't you get out of the cradle, you know? That's what I used to think, you know? Why don't you get out of the cradle once in a while, instead of sitting down there crying? But when I saw a man like the Coleman sit down and cry, you know, I thought to myself, boy, that might be something to that. Until I got them myself. Then you find out what it's like. Right.
Did your feet burn or were they cold?
No. I tell you, you know, you can, why we call them the happy feet, you can stand on your feet. You have to keep dancing all the time. You can stand still. If you stand still, you know, it's just like standing on the red hot plate. Burning. You know when you have a bad toothache, it's a hollow tooth, and you eat, you know, and the food goes and touches the nerve, you know what it feels like? It makes you jump, doesn't it? Well, that's not just a bind like that, like the tooth, you know, the feet were the same as that, you know, and that was steady. It wouldn't let go, you know, just steady, steady, you know.
Was there anything you could do for it?
Just put them in cold water. Most of the boys, you know, used to soak them in cold water. Keep their feet in cold water all the time.
Yeah. Did this last a long time, or did it just come maybe and go away and come back again?
Like me, you know, when I got them, what I had to do, you know, I used to sleep close to a window in Japan. And in the winter, you know, I'll stick my feet out the window until they were almost frozen, you know, until I didn't feel them anymore. Then you lay down and you sleep for about 1 hour, one and a half hour, until they start warming up and they start again. Then you wake up and you put them back out.
You said you went in the first draft to Japan. Can you remember how you went? What kind of boat you went in?
No, well, the boat, it was a Japanese boat, you know, but then they put us down in the dark in the morning, and then down in the hold. We never seen nothing, you know. We weren't allowed out.
Did you get any more food on the boat?
Oh, well, we were getting our three meals, you know.
This was the first boat you went on?
That the first draft, Canadian draft that went to Japan.
Yeah.
See, there were two other drafts that went ahead of us, you know, but they were British. And then...
Where did you go in Japan, and what kind of work did you do? What was the name of
the
shipyard?
We were in the shipyard then.
Shipyard?
Yeah.
And where was this?
In Yokohama.
Yokohama, right?
Yeah.
And did you stay there?
That was the 3D camp.
3D, right? Did you stay there the rest of the war?
No.
No?
No, I took sick, you know. I had dysentery and yellow jaundice and beriberi. That the doctor, Captain Reed, sent me down to Shinagawa Hospital there. Well, I was there for quite a while, and then we never came back to Yokohama. We went up north from there. I went to Aomori. Aomori was headquarters, the Japanese Army headquarters. Aomori.
Aomori. How do you spell it? A-M-U-R-I?
O-M-O-R-Y. Mm-hmm. Aomori.
And what did you do there?
Well, I wasn't there very long, but... might be a couple of weeks. But then we went way up north in the Nan Man. That it was a new camp.
Well,
but
at Aomori, what did you do there? Did you work? Or?
No, I didn't work at all then. Mm-hmm. No.
It was just a camp, like prison?
Just a camp then. But it wasn't a prison camp, no, it was the Japanese headquarters there.
Army headquarters?
Yeah.
were there other people with you, or were you by yourself?
No, there was about a dozen of our guys, you know. There was some American, some British, and there was maybe one or two Canadians there, that's all.
You just stayed there for...
Just stayed there, wait until it was time to move.
Yeah. How was the food there? Was it
We didn't do nothing there, you know. Yeah. No. But in the hospital in Shinagawa, there was... they took me to work one day. There was shops at the back of the hospital in the point by the bay there. And... there was a sawmill at the back. So they took me out to work one day. And I got in there, you know, and one of the Jap was grinding a saw. You know, one of those circular saw. And his grinder was turning the wrong way, you know, upward instead of down. And you see, at home I was brought up in sawmill. My father had sawmill in Ontario. And I was brought up in that, you know. So when I saw him digging the saw like that, you know, I told him, that's no good. And he was having quite a time, you know, because the minute that he'll turn the saw a bit, you know, he'll bind on the grinder, you know. And if you break one of those grinder, brother, you know, you've got something. So I told him that's no good. So he asked me, he said, you know something about it? I said, a little bit. Well, he said, go ahead. So, you know, the electric motor, you know, you just have to change two wires, you know, you reverse them. So the first thing, you know, I reverse the grinder. I wouldn't work on it that way. And then make a good solid table, you know, have a good solid table to work on. And when he saw me start working on the motor to reverse it, I reversed the motor. Well, he went away, you know. And he came back just at noontime to pick me up to take me to camp. And he looked at the saw table that I had made, a good solid table, and lowered it to come to the center of the grader, of the grinder, you know. Not from the top or under the center, right in the center of it. He looked at that and he said, ah. So when we get into camp, he talked quite a while with the God, you know. So after a while, the God came in with an interpreter, you know. So he told me, he said, this man down there wants you to work with him all the time. So he said, you go to work with him. I said, good. You know? So he'd got the time, you know, in the morning, time to go to work. I'll go at the gate, you know, they'll open the gate. I'll go to work by myself. Come back by myself. They didn't have God with me, you know. But, boy, the stuff I used to take into camp. Boy, the stuff I used to take into camp, the newspaper printed in English and everything. Well, this civilian was bringing me all the stuff, you know.
So you're able to get information and all?
Yeah, but, well, information, you know, he gave me what? You know, yeah, signal talk and all stuff.
And
yeah. But the paper printed in English.
Yeah.
Well, I used to take that into camp, and we had the. It was our camp commandant in that place, in Shinagawa, was an American. A captain from the American Army. Down there in the, at the hospital, they made us dig some trenches, you know, and make air raid shelters. And there was one right... No, well, you leave that alone now. There was one right in front of... they built an air raid shelter for the Japanese, right in front of the Japanese hut, you know. And the camp commandant, Japanese camp commandant, his name was Surimi. And if the officer or somebody was doing something wrong in the camp, they'll make the officer stand to attention on the roof of the shelter. And we used to call that Mount Surimi. You know? Lots of time. One time the American, they bombed around the camp. One bomb dropped right inside the camp. It was all incendiary bomb. that the Japanese want and pick up one of those bombs, you know, and they bring it into camp, and there's a nice little ribbon on it, you know. So they pull the ribbon and boom! And they brought it in, there was a fellow, a Swede by the name Peterson died. Well, they want Peterson to see, you know, they get Peterson with them, you know, and the captain, the our camp commander, and they were all around it, you know, but the Japanese got hurt pretty bad. So they made them stand to attention for 3 days on Mount Shurumi. One night it rained all night, you know, and the poor officer was up there, you know, standing there to the attention on Mount Shurumi.
That's a long time.
Eh?
That's a long time. Did anything like that ever happen to you?
Eh?
Anything like that ever happen to you?
No, no. I always try to keep my nose clean, you know, if possible. Sometimes it was impossible.
When the last camp you went to, where was it?
That was way up north. They call it Suwa.
Suwa?
Suwa. It was an iron mine. And that mine, they were transporting the ore on cable from the mine over the big ravine, over the mountain, down to the smelter on the other side, that's Sendai. But with the mine there in Sendai, you know, they were transporting the ore up there.
Did you work in the mine?
No, no. But when I went to that camp, they wouldn't let me out at all. In that last camp. I wasn't allowed to go out. The only time I go out was with the civilian foreman.
Why couldn't you go out?
I could speak a bit Japanese and I was dealing too much with the civilian. That, you see, they got me there in the Shinagawa Hospital, you know. And then Aomori was the same, you know, that you get around, you know, you talk enough to defend yourself and to deal with them. Well, you'll deal with them and with you. Mm-hmm. So once we got up there, we used to have a sergeant major, the Japanese sergeant major. He says, you're not going to go work outside in the morning. I said, no, why? He said, too much black market. You work inside the camp.
Did you work in the camp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carpenter, I was a carpenter in camp. Yeah. And then the civilian foreman, you know. Well, I was better off there anyway, you know, because the civilian foreman will take me out, you know. They have another little sawmill there at the mine, you know. And we'll saw some logs, a few logs, and then he'll take me downtown. He took me to his own home a couple of times. We had no trouble, you know.
What kind of wood was it? Would you work with? Was it bamboo you worked with?
Pardon?
What kind of wood did you work with?
We would call that here, it looks like the jack pine here, you know.
Maybe
it wasn't jack pine.
Yeah. Can you tell me maybe how the huts were built? You know, like, were you...
Well, it's all in 4x4.
4x4, eh?
Yeah. All braced up.
Can you maybe describe it so I would sort of...
No, it's mud. We used to think that was funny, you know, they had those water buffalo, you know, like bullocks. Hey, not out. Bullocks, you know, the water buffalo, you know, and they have a big pool. They put mud in there, you know, and walk around there with the water buffalo, you know, to mix the mud. And that's the way the huts are built, with that mud, you know. Paper, all scraps of paper and everything is mixed into that.
What about when the war ended? Do you remember? Do you remember how you knew that the war was over?
We knew it 3 days before.
3 days before the war was over.
Because the men went out to work. That's when they dropped the first bomb.
When the men were working.
And on Kushu. When they dropped the first bomb, you see, the men went out to work in the morning, and the job brought the men back at 10 o'clock.
In the morning?
In the morning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they said, work is suspended till further notice.
This was after the first bomb?
After the first bomb. Hey! Now, you know you're not supposed to have that. Now, come on. But 3 days later, you know, the other bomb that they dropped in Nagasaki, that finished it.
Did you hear the bombs? Or
no.
Or
no, we were too far out.
Yeah, you didn't know anything about it?
No. And in the afternoon, you see the camp coming and said, he came and told us that we are not prisoners anymore. They are prisoners.
After the first bomb?
After the second bomb.
Then.
He said, they are prisoners. We are not prisoners anymore. Then he wanted to know if we want to take the guard at the gate or they're going to keep guard. So we told them to keep the guard. But the big sergeant major I mentioned before, that was he was very good to us, though.
He was American, eh?
No, he was a Jap.
No, Japanese, yeah.
We used to call him the big sergeant major because he was big and tall for a Jap. And he was very good to us. And after they start dropping food and supply in our camp by plane, you see, our camp, it was very hard to drop food in because we were in between three mountains. See, there was one mountain like, what's it like here? This one was where the mine was.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another one here. And another one here. The only way that the plane could come in to drop stuff in our camp was way down in the hollow, you know, in a ravine like in between those three mountains. And the plane had to come in between these two, that one here and that one here, you know, between the peak, and come in like that, you know, in swerving like that and outside. They had to miss this one here coming in and miss it going out. And it was hard for them to get in there. It took a long time for them to find that camp. And they had packed sugar in 2 45-gallon drums of gas, you know, that oil drum, and welded together. But that was full of sugar, you know. You can imagine the weight in that. And the way that they were coming in, you know, and circling like that, and the Japanese hut was in the long row here. You know. So they were coming in and dropped the stuff, and like those drums, they were hitting the Japanese hut, and you know, they were going through there like a like mud stick, you know.
Was it, they have parachutes on these?
Pardon?
Do they have parachutes when they drop them, or just...
those drums, you know, there were no parachute on them. There was nothing to hold that, you know. But they had to come so close, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the food, the other food and the clothing, you know, they had small parachute on them.
What did it do to the hut?
They were going through there, you know. When the Japanese are here, the plane come in, you know, you should have seen them clearing out of there. We were laughing, you know. But all those things, you know, you can make it miserable for yourself. You know what I mean? If you sit and think of why should I be here, eh? But in the section where I was, you know, I was amongst most of the rifle, the people from down east, you know, the other regiment. And the guy that I was with, you know, we were taken. Looking at all the joke, the funny part of the way things happen. Like I was telling you about that witch, you know.
Do you want to tell me that again?
Why?
You want to tell me again?
Yeah, I'll tell you. You know, this lady in Ontario, you know, she was very good, you know, and in the dream, you know, she was looking like a witch all the time. A big round nose, by which it was, you know, that she did have a round nose, she was skinny. And in the dream, you know, she was always warning me about things, the trouble coming, you know. So that one day, you know, I tell Albert Murchie, he said, you take your bottle out. We had the, see, we'll mix the dry tea, the tea leaves in the bottle, you know, before we leave camp. And we had tied the bottle around the neck with the wire. And we'll hook it inside of our smock, you know, in the sleeve like that. So when it was either empty or full, you know, we'll button our smock and it didn't show at all. We used to take it all over the place. What? Filled the bottle in the camp, you know, in the yard. So Albert Murchie, you know, that the foreman had dismissed us. Something had happened in the other part of the yard, of the shipyard. Well, our section came in, you know, we came in and we were waiting to be dismissed to go in for lunch. So our civilian foreman came in, you know, and he dismissed us. Well, Edgar Labrick was the man in charge of us. So we went in. So Albert Murchie told me, he said, you know, he said, I went and filled the bottle. I didn't get no trouble. I said, well, the day's not over yet. And just as I finished saying that, you know, the guard came at the door. He says, our two, that's our section. So we all pile outside. And we all pile outside. So the guard actually had your break. He said, who dismissed those men? So LeBrick said in Japanese, he said, what karunai? I don't understand. Oh, you don't understand, eh? Bang, 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 bang. LeBrick straightened up. He said, Mokaido dismissed them. He dismissed them. Oh, he said, now you understand, eh? So we all got slapped, you know. So we went back in and said to Albert Murchie, I said, the day's not over yet, eh? And that's the way we were all the time, you know. Always look for the funny part of it, you know. That's the day's not over yet, eh? So he said, look, he said, you tell me, he said, what happened? How do you know that? He said, for the last 3 or 4 months, he said, you've been warning us in the morning. Be careful, fella, something is coming up today. He said, how do you know that? You tell us in the morning. So I tell him about the dream I was getting about that woman, that old witch. Well, he said, next time you dream I'm her, he said, break her neck for me, eh, will you?
Did you dream of this old lady every night, or just...
No, just...
certain times?
Only when there was something coming up, you know. A few of the boys will remember, you know, that we were in that shipyard. They were lounging the ship, and it was a pretty big freighter, you know. And you see, they had to stop us from working, you know, because they needed all the air for the ram, you know, that started the ship on this kid. We were all lined up on the road, you know. And just, they were, the minister was there, you know, with his book, you know, and the bottle of champagne banging on the ship, you know, and the ram went. All of a sudden, we hear that plane, a lonely little plane, come in, you know, and make a circle and take a dive right over the boat. And just as it hit the water, they drop a bomb in it. It was one of the carrier, one of those destroyer ships that was around, and they had sent that little reconnaissance plane. We all start laughing, you know, so they land us all up on the road in front of the mess hall where we ate, you know. Go on. And they make us, there was too many men, you see, they had to keep 450 at work all the time. We were 500 in our camp. And they had to keep 450 at work. So they bring us up on the road there in front of our mess hall, you know. There's too many of them to beat up. So they make us turn face to face, and we slap one another. And the guy, the fellow that was in front of me, you know, his name was Lancaster, you know, he was about so wide, you know, and about 6'3". You can imagine a tall man like that, you know, as skinny as he was. And I look at him, you know, and I was just touching him very lightly, you know. All of a sudden, you know, he stopped laughing. Well, I didn't see the guard come behind, you know. He stopped and only gave me a good slap. You know, to warn me, you know, that the Jap was dying. But I was laughing, whack on the head with the rifle. I wasn't hitting him hard enough. But you can still feel the bump here, you know, where he cut my head with the rifle butt, you know.
Did it knock you out?
No.
No. How did you get home from Japan? They dropped food into the camp and clothing?
No. The only clothing we had, the American gave us that, you know. Like, from our camp, we came down to the same shipyard we were working in. The American had taken one of those warehouses for their headquarters, you know, in Yokohama. And the American took us over from that. The Jap took us in that. And I felt sorry for the poor Imperial troop there, you know, that the one that were with us. I felt sorry for them, you know. The British had sent a ship to pick them up, you know. And what they got there, like the American took us over, and the British took their men over. And The American took us in front of that warehouse type. There's another place that we had quite a lot, you know. Well, we had bugs, you know, we got lousy in our camp. So the American gave us a good meal right there, you know, and a cup of hot coffee. And after that they gave us, they said, anybody, anything that you want to keep, for keepsake, here's a bag, one of those kid bags, put it in line, put it in, the rest, throw it in. Well, naturally, we didn't want to keep the clothes that the Jap had given us, eh? So we were throwing everything away. The only thing we want to keep. So they take us inside the warehouse, you know. And as we're walking to showers. Well, before you get into the shower, well, you strip, you take all your clothes out. And then you go through a door. When you go through that door, the door is locked behind you. You can't go back then. So because that clothes, you know, is no good, what we took off there, you know. So you're good to go and go back, you know, and get your clothes. Well, the door is locked. There's only one door you can get out. Hey, come on. So the guy that was ahead of me, you know, he says, I guess that's where we come out, then that door is not locked. You open the door and walk out. No clothes at all on him. There's two nurses running inside the door. He goes, whoop! He's backing up, grab him, come on, out here.
He's waiting for you. Nurse is waiting on the other side of the door.
Well, always laughing, you know, that was comical at time, believe me.
What happened to the Japanese soldiers and the guards?
They burn all that.
The guards? Japanese guards?
No, the Americans, they were burning all the...
The camps?
Aye?
The camps?
No, not the camp. I couldn't say about the camp, what happened to those camps, you know.
The guards? The Japanese guards?
Well, they all come down with us.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What would happen to them? They go to...
No.
No idea?
I know the doctor asked me, you know, the doctor that was looking... you see, when we came out of the shower, we go in front of the doctor, you know, for medical exam, you know. So he looked at me, he said, you've been in the hospital for a while. I said, yeah. He said, what was wrong? I said, I had yellow jaundice, dysentery, and beriberi. So he said, what do you want to do? You want to go home now or stay here? I said, keep me here for about a month, eh? Hell no, he said, there'll be no job left. He said, put him on the plane and send him to Guam. You know, the American, you know. He said, hell no, he said, there'd be no job left.
When you went to Guam, you took a boat?
No, we flew up to Guam. Well, I was in Guam for a little over 2 weeks, you know. And in the hospital, they gave you the time that the penicillin just came out, you know, and some of those pills, you know, for dysentery. I had the Amoy big dysentery, you know, it's a worm. And they feed me with that. And then we took the boat and we went to first of all, from Guam, we went to Hawaii. Then we went to Manila in the Philippines. Then we came back to Hawaii again, then to San Francisco. I weigh 192 pounds when I left Winnipeg here. But going through the medical strip, and when I came back in Victoria, I weighed exactly 89 pounds.
Were you treated well by the Americans when you...
Oh yeah, oh, the American, you know, you can't... You haven't got a word to say about them, you know, they were good. The only thing that I didn't like there, you know, the American, was... You see, there was nobody to meet us, the Canadian then. So the American Red Cross gave us $5, a $5 bill, you see.
Is this in Canada or...
No, in Guam.
In Guam, yeah.
In Guam. And you see, that $5 bill was marked. It was the Red Cross that gave us that, you know. Because the American had told us, if you need anything, you go to the canteen and get it. Just ask for it. But most of the Canadians are too proud of themselves, you know, to say, well, I'm going to go and ask for stuff like that, eh? Well, we didn't want to go there and ask for stuff for nothing, eh? So the Red Cross gave us a $5 bill. So when you go and ask for what you wanted, you put that $5 bill, they'll push the $5 bill to you and say, get out. You know? You know, with the stuff, they'll give you the stuff. Because we wouldn't go and ask for the stuff, you know. I personally, I wouldn't go and ask for it. Cigarette, they gave us, I suppose they gave us a package of cigarette a day. Instead of a package, every day you find a cartoon of cigarette on your bed. That is not the package, it was a cartoon. It was the same coming down on the boat. On the boat, you know, you'll come up for meal, somebody'll go down while we were sleeping, you know, you'll come back, there's a cartoon of cigarette on the bed. Coming down from San Francisco to Seattle, it's a long way. We came down on the train, right? Every day, a cartoon of cigarette. If the train stops someplace at the station, they won't give you an apple and orange. You'll get out, you know, that look around, come back, a whole basket of fruit on your seat. You know? One time, you know, an old... A woman in the 60s or 70s, you know, she was pretty old. But, you know, she came, she said, here, a basket of peaches. I said, lady, I said, it's wasted. I said, I've got so many fruit, I don't know what to do with them, you know. I said, it's wasted. Ha, she said, I know what kind of peach you like to have right now. Right now. Then the padre come along, you know, I'm trying to sleep in the afternoon. And our padre come along, you know, jump on you know, with his knees and his fists, you know, and pound you. He says, hey, get up, you're sleeping the best of your life away.
How about since you came back? Have you been treated well by the government since you came back, do you think?
Well, I've been working pretty well steady. As far as our government, you know, I did not do any trouble, you know, actually. There's only one time, as far as Deer Lodge, you go to Deer Lodge, you know, you can get better treatment any place that you can get in night. You're well treated. But, you know, now they have that place that they call the screening downstairs. Well, I don't know if that doctor has got something against me or not. I don't know. I can't say. But, you know, I go and see him. And I tell him, I said, boy, my arm is sore, terrible sore. And it was so sore that time I'll throw up, you know. And it was in the arm and in the shoulder. And then I want to throw up. But the first time he said it's the nerves. That was the doctor in the screening, you know. But he don't take no tests. But I go back about a week later, and I said, you know, I said, this arm is sore. I said, it's no more joke right now. And I said, I'm sore here in the chest now. He said, it's the muscle. Well, at that I got mad and I went to the family doctor, you know. And I just about died from it, you know. I had a bad heart attack. And that's what was working on me at the time. You know? But that's the only thing, you know. But as I say, you know, when I got mad at him, I told him, when I got a sore muscle, I tell you that. You don't tell me that. I tell you. Then he says, are you a doctor? I said, no, I'm not. Well, he said, I am. Well, I said, why don't you act like one then?
What about, have you been in the hospital much since you came back?
I was in the hospital at first.
Yeah, I just wondered how you feel now.
Well, outside of this, you know.
Your heart.
The heart, you know, and the stomach. My stomach is bad. But outside of that, you know, I feel good. I feel good enough, you know, that, of course, we're not getting younger every day either, eh? So, I can't complain too much, you know.
Did you notice a change in people's attitude from before you went to Hong Kong and when you came back? Did you notice that people's attitudes changed?
The people were quite a bit different, you know. You know, in general, you know, it was.
I should maybe ask you again. Did you notice any change in people's attitudes from before you went to Hong Kong and when you came back? Did people change much?
The people were different, you know. That there was a big difference in the people, you know. Like, what I meant to say, you know, in dealing with people and things like that, you know. They had told us, you know, if you want to deal with do any deal, things have changed. Have lawyers. Things have changed right away. I found that out. Yeah. Yeah, that it wasn't the same at all. As far as I was concerned myself and all that, one fellow that I had a very good deal talk with was a lawyer, Mr. David. His son was with us. You know Mon Davis, we were talking, we were saying?
Yeah.
Mon Davis, his son got killed then. And that morning, you know, I had come in, I had to go around. You know, that day I say I had to come back to Aberdeen and exchange a load of ammunition, you know, that I had to change that. Well, the other truck driver had gone back to One Shy Gap at our headquarters there. But I stayed and changed that. And when I came up at Mount Davis there, you know, I said to the officer in charge, I said, here, I said, see that your men unload that load. I said, I'm going to have a little rest. I said, I've had it for today. So I go behind the officer's tent there. There was a tree, you know, in the shade. I lay down there, you know, sit down. And I see the cook bring the officer's breakfast. And I was getting hungry too. So the cook that put the officer's plate, you know, on the floor in the tent, right at the back. So I left the back of the tent, you know, and I see the plate. Pulled the plate out and I had this breakfast, sausage and eggs. And I put the plate back and I leaned down, you know, and kind of dozed out. All of a sudden, I hear the dog kai-ai. The officer said, the goddamn dog at my breakfast. The little dog had crawled into the tent, you know, and licked his plate. Like, goddamn dog, no breakfast. Laugh. So, I had a good talk with his father here, you know. As a matter of fact, I had started buying a house, you know, and he was the lawyer that took that.
Do you think the time that you spent in prison and the hardship that you went through, you know, the starvation and everything, do you think that hurt you in any way for when you came back? Do you think it slowed you up? Made it harder for you to get along?
Well, actually, you know, as we feel ourselves, we don't notice that, you know. We don't notice that. But I've had about four doctors talking to me. The first time is when I went to get my first driver license here, you know. The license bureau tell me you need glasses, and the doctor and dealers tell me I don't. So, well, I figure somebody's crazy there, one of the two, you know, one side or the other. Because actually myself, I'm in between, you know, I don't know. Because you yourself, you don't notice that. So, I went to the nurse at the Vulcan. I was working at the Vulcan in engineering at the time. I asked the nurse, I said, do you know a good eye doctor? She said, yes. She said, I can send you to Ramsey. Well, Ramsey is one of the head men here in eye specialists, you know. So she sent me that. Well, I had tried to make an appointment to go and see him, you know, but I couldn't see him within 3 months. So I thought, well, that's no good. So I went and see the nurse, you know, and she said, I'll get you in right away. So she sent me out there, you know, and he looked in my eyes and he said, you know, he said, what happened to your eyes in the first place? I said, what do you mean? I said, the scars on the eye, or what do you mean what happened to them? He said, no, and he said, the scar won't do that. But he said, what happened to you? What did happen then? Well, I said, tell me what you mean. Maybe I can tell you something. He said, your eyes are 15 years older than you are. So I said, oh, I said that. I said, well, I said, I was a prisoner of war in Japan. Well, he said, I don't want to hear no more. He said, I've got it now. He said, that's it. But he said, you know, he said, I'm interested here. Very, very interested. And he said, you do need glasses. Well, I said, okay, give me a prescription for them. And then I explained to him, you know, I said, you see, I said, I go to dealers because I draw a pension, and I'm pensioned on the eyes. So I said, you might as well give me your bill too. I said, they're going to pay everything. So he gave me the prescription, and then when I went back, that was Dr. Adamson was there at the time, you know, the head pension doctor. So he told me, he said, I told him what had happened, you know. So he called the eye doctor and he said, here, give him those glasses. And he said, I'll answer you, pay the bill. He said, you should have known better, he said, than tell him he don't need glasses. Well, actually, you see, myself, I didn't know that myself, you know. It was because the license bureau says you need them, and the other one says you don't, you know, I'm in between the two. So, what are you going to do? And the only thing you can do is to go outside and find out. And now I'm resolved, you know, that I'm not going to argue with them at all. If I go there, I tell them there's something wrong, okay, if they don't want to believe me, I'll go to another doctor and I'll get back there and prove it to them. You know that? Because I think it's bad enough to be sick. You don't want to argue about being sick. Eh?
That's right.
And as far as other things, you know, like, if we had a little resistance into us, you know, like other things, when I had the heart attack, the doctor that looked after me told me, he said, everything on you is 15 years older than you are. What happened to you? Eh? We don't get that from up there, from their lives, you know. It's when you go some other place, you know, that they come out, they don't know about it. But what happened to you? Everything is 15 years older than you are. So it must have done something, eh? Probably on each individual it's a different thing, you know. But as far as I'm concerned, that's what they are telling me, you know, everyone I go to. What happened to you?
You know,
I don't know. Yet, you know, I don't think I'm worse off than anybody else. Okay. One thing. Now we'll go back to Jamaica. You see, I was saying that we were holding the ration in the transport, the ration from the R camp, the prison camp, the internist camp, and then we had some refugee that came from Gibraltar or someplace, you know, that came in, the Mona camp, we used to call it in Jamaica. Well, when I was on the camp track, you see, we had the quartermaster died. And I don't want to mention no name, I don't want anything like that, you know. But the quartermaster was brought back in and he was court-martialed, you know. And that just so happened at the same time, you know. This is one thing that bothers me, you know. It bothers me. And it just so happened that I was on the ration truck at the time. But then they had that company that was up to Newcastle. The ration that was going up there, that was on the contract, it was a Jamaican, you know, that had the contract to haul the ration up there. So we had landslide on the road up to Newcastle. So that morning that we had the landslide, he said, I'm not going up. So they came and got me, you know, and sent me up. But I'm running ahead of myself there, you know. There was Jack Hay that I mentioned before. He was on the truck before me. And we had at the time the transport officer was Mr. Blackford. Well, he went to Blackford and he said, I want to transfer out of that truck. So Blackford sent me, put me on that truck, and Jack went on a different job. I don't know what he went, what he went on. Until I got fed up too, you know, with it. So I went to Blackford. I said, Mr. Blackford, I said, you know, I said, every man should take his turn on that truck. He said, yes, I know. But he said, nobody wants to go on that truck. He said, Jai, he got fed up. And he said, now you're fed up with it. He said, nobody wants to go on that truck. So he said, what do you want me to do? Well, I said, the best thing to do is to make it compulsory to that everybody take 2 weeks. Every 2 weeks you change. Because, you see, the quartermaster had bought a car, and he wanted us to take gas for his car. And personally, I didn't want to get mixed up into that. And I wasn't going to take gas and take a chance to get my neck chopped out for no for him, eh? So that's the reason why he got up to Jack Hay for the same thing. So I went to Jack Hay and I said, Jack, I said, why did you want to get off that truck? He's the wife because the old man wants me to pick up stuff for him. And he wouldn't leave me alone. Well, I said, I'm the same now too, you know. So I said, I'm not going to take a chance on it. I said, I want to transfer you. So I said, how about you and I go and talk to Blackford, and we'll get Mr. Blackford to talk to the colonel that make it compulsory that every man take 2 weeks on that. Every 2 weeks he change. So he said, that's an idea. So we talk, you know, with Blackford. But then Bardell, Neil Bardell took over, you know. And that was my chance that came in, you know, when we had the landslide. Well, nobody wanted to take that trip up there, too, because that was an awful lot of work, you know. You had to go up, shovel the high side of the hill, you know, onto the low side to level up your truck to pass over that, eh? That was an awful lot of work. As I told the transport officer at the time, I said, you have to send me a man or a fatigue party because there's going to be an awful lot of work. So he sent me Poole. There was a fellow by the name of Poole in the transport. He sent Poole with me for the first trip. Now I come here, you know what? They do bother me about that. You see, there's one fellow that lived in Stonewall. And he's got in his mind that I was in with the quartermaster. And he's telling everybody that I was in with him. But what he's not telling them is that they didn't want, he himself didn't want to be on that truck. And the only chance I got to get off of that truck is when I went up to Newcastle, and I didn't want to go back on it either, believe me. Well, I went to, the Americans start building the airport at Palisado at the time. So when the road was cleared to go to Newcastle, I went hauling the ration for the American at Palisado. And they had another a sea air base off of Spanish Town there that they were building. But when this fellow Trick from Stonewall threw that in my face that I wasn't with him, you know, it bothers me quite a bit, you know. Because I certainly wasn't with that, and I like to catch a hold of Mr. Baldwin in front of him and really talk with him. You see, you can't stop a person from thinking what he wants to think, but don't think out loud. Right? Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything more to talk about? I don't think I have any more
questions. No, well, that's...
Do you have any more stories or anything you
want to... Well, not that I can think about right now, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how you feel about the Japanese?
Right?
Pardon? Can I ask how you feel about the Japanese today? How do you feel towards them?
I get no bad feeling about them, you know. As a matter of fact, I've got a friend here, a little out, you know. We used to work at the Vulcan together. And as a matter of fact, he's one of my best friends here, you know. You see, the Japanese, they are not bad people, you know. They are very copious, they are very ingenious people. They're good working people. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, they are not worse than I am. Yeah, we are all the same, you know. So that's about, you know, You hear people talk, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so. To me, you know, we are all even. We are all the same. I think I'm just as much as the next guy, and the next guy is just as much as I am. No matter what he is, we are all equal.